Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, we talk about Elon Musk buying Twitter and why he plans to take it private.
Plus, we share more about the social networking giant that is opening its first metaverse store.
Also on the show, RIP to CNN's new streaming service, CNN Plus.
And we share how MentorCam plans to reshape the future of mentorship online.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
Trending up.
Well, Amber, I am sick as a dog. I don't normally sound like this, so I apologize for everybody. Actually, this I feel like this makes me sound more male because I normally have a higher voice. I'm back in Toronto. It's a little bit cold, but I'm happy to be home. How have you been?
I have been doing well. You're right. The weather is hit and miss. My parents were just visiting for a few days. And I have to tell you that my dad just got a new car and he signed up for SiriusXM. So he listened to The Feed this past week. So I think he's going to be a regular listener. So we got to be safe out there, Michael, with what we say.
I am so nervous now because your dad is very, very smart. And he always gives great commentary and critique. So now this makes, I wish I had known this earlier because now I think I'm going to probably end up staying up later the night before to study harder to try and think of better questions.
Yes, we got to choose our words wisely here. And speaking of choosing words wisely, big news this past week that has been everywhere. Everybody is talking about it. Elon
Musk. Like a tsunami of Elon Musk news.
It is. Elon Musk is buying Twitter, you know, assuming the deal goes through as it looks to go through. It's been, approved, in, at least in the first stages. And this is something that a lot of us didn't think would happen because we thought that potentially he would be blocked in one form or another, including Twitter making some steps last week to try to do just that. But money talks, Michael, and $44 billion is a lot of money and a lot of people like money.
Yeah, it's interesting that it does come down to money and suddenly things change and it seems to be agreeable for parties, whereas obviously we've reported on the show before that it wasn't agreeable and people within Twitter and the board were opposed to somebody like Elon Musk taking it over. So that is interesting. What I think the big discussion is now, what does it mean for the platform and mm-hmm. will it be eroded further or will it be enhanced? Will it be safer and policies? And so this is a story that's going to unfold. The tweet that concerned me the most, which I didn't really understand the reason behind it, was that he tweeted, "Free speech is the bedrock of a functioning democracy and Twitter is the digital town square where matters vital to the future of humanity are debated. Twitter has tremendous potential. I look forward to working with the company and users to unlock it." I don't know where and what that means. And that's probably my concern. And it could mean I probably wouldn't use Twitter anymore because I do like Twitter and I like LinkedIn. I see the value. I just don't know, you know, if it's worth it after, you know, if things change for the worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're exactly right. There's a lot of people who are struggling right now to figure out, you know, what this means for them as users. And, you know, I think that time will tell. We'll see what happens as this rolls out, if there are some significant changes. But clearly, just before we go on, I think people have a muddy view of free speech. And it's really a hard topic to kind of define. And it's even harder within a social platform to be able to say, hey, we're going to remove some of those guardrails, because that has potential issues, not just for the safety of users, but also for advertisers as well, wanting to be part of that platform. Twitter, of course, making the majority of its revenue from advertisers. So a bunch of issues. So we will keep on this story as usual. But we do want to talk about another technology giant, and that is Meta, Facebook's parent company. And Michael, I don't know why this makes me laugh.
So, this makes me laugh so hard. Go ahead.
Right? Like, okay, I'm doing an event this week on the metaverse, and I'm excited to talk about these virtual worlds, but it's funny to me that we need a retail store to showcase it.
Well, this is the part that I don't understand in any way, shape, or form. So after the pandemic, everyone was like, we want to see each other in person, but then everyone's pushing to go virtual in the metaverse, and it's where everyone should live and interact. And then, as you just said, but then to be able to do that, the only way to maybe get people on board is to have a physical store. There are so many things wrong with all of that. I just don't get it. And I just kind of think it might be just a complete waste of time.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be kind of fascinating to see what happens. But, you know, I don't know. I feel sort of that the whole metaverse world has another bunch
it's
of
not
issues.
Real.
Yeah, that could be problematic.
You're buying stuff that's not real. It's not tangible. Like, it's
and there's a reason that some of this stuff makes sense in the context of training within businesses and even
but
traveling
we had that
to some
already,
extent.
Right? We don't need the metaverse for that. Like there's virtual reality and augmented reality, and you can use applications to do that, and you can learn, and you can surgeons can train people from other places in the world. Like that, you don't need a metaverse for that. You have applications and technology for that. We don't all need to live in the metaverse.
Yes.
And spend time in the metaverse.
Well, and that's kind of, they're calling all of this stuff the metaverse. So the problem is sort of the language we're using even to define it. But just quickly, because we don't have too much time left, wanted to mention this story.
It came, it went, and no one saw it.
This is really, I listened to one of the hosts from CNN Plus talk about the story. Really unbelievable that CNN launched the streaming service and then shut it down after a month. They obviously spent about $300 million, according to the BBC, on this service. But, you know, I think it's important to say that it wasn't shut down by sort of CNN. It was shut down by their new bosses at Discovery and just a whole bunch of money down the toilet.
Yeah, and I think this was the biggest struggle, because obviously when the deal was proposed and then waiting to go through, you know, they had reservations and they probably wouldn't have allowed the service to be launched. But obviously, given mergers and timelines and what they are and aren't allowed to say and do until a certain time and the deal is approved, this was the only time they could actually pull the plug, because I don't think anyone was on board, because of Discovery's already got a very robust digital strategy. It's quite unfortunate, because I think it's 500 people don't have a job. You know, some of them will be able to find jobs within CNN, hopefully. You know, but it's a tough one. And
sure.
I think the biggest question is, a network like CNN, with their footprint globally, isn't able to make something like this work. I think that kind of sends a shockwave throughout mm-hmm. the news streaming service business, from looking at what is the future look like in consuming news.
Absolutely. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on all of these stories and keep you up to date on what's going on in these amazing worlds of technology and media.
All right. When we return, how a new app plans to help with family financial wellness.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Techstar.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Zenda has developed a parent-facing app to help with school fee payments and family financial wellness. Haseeb Ahmed is the co-founder of Zenda and joins us now to share more. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So let's get started. I think the first thing we would like you to explain is exactly how this works in terms of paying school bills. A lot of people, of course, have children in public school, maybe don't understand what this tool would be able to provide. So walk us through why you thought there was a need for this.
So we have been in the education domain for about 3 to 4 years now, with an earlier venture. And with that venture, we recognize the problems that are faced by schools in collecting the fees, number one, and also on the parent side, right? So if you talk about the school side first, schools in our parts of the world, talking about Middle East, Asia, and Africa, they collect primarily through cash and check. And online payments are still a small component. So they struggle with having long queues at the school, they struggle with reconciliation, et cetera, et cetera. And with a previous venture, we saw it firsthand. When we talk about the parents, on the other hand, they have to go to the school, take time off from work, pay for parking, stand in queues, and pay in check and cash again. So what we wanted to do with Zenda was digitize the entire process, right? So when I need to pay my utility bills, I don't need to go to the utility provider, I can pay it through the app. So we wanted to do the same in education for private sector schools primarily.
So what does that look like exactly? Because it sounds like it's not only helping parents, enabling them to be able to pay their bills and track it and monitor that with their schools, but it also sounds like you're helping schools move to the digital age with their processes. So how difficult is it to convince or get schools onto the platform? How does that work exactly?
So starting with what you mentioned first, exactly. So it helps the parents. So through the app, they can see what is outstanding, what do they need to pay for, what is tuition fee, what is transport fee, what is uniform fee, etc. And they can, in a couple of clicks, pay through credit card, debit card, Apple Pay, etc. And then on the school side, it also helps them digitize. Now, the school sector traditionally has long sales cycles, but in part thanks to the push towards digitization during COVID, now more and more schools recognize the benefit of it. And once they start using it, they realize that it also saves them a lot of time and money. So we have seen the uptake to increase gradually. But once the school go live, we have seen the feedback and adoption to be very, very high.
One of the things we noticed in the TechCrunch article is that, as they say verbatim, you are eyeing Africa as your next frontier. Can you talk a little bit about the market there and why you think this is a good fit for what you're doing at Zenda?
100%. So when we look at these markets, right, so we talk about Middle East, Africa, and Asia, there are a few things that are common. So one, private sector education is quite prevalent. So 30 to 40% of the student population will go to private sector education. And second, the private education is not cheap. It is significantly higher than public sector and takes about 25 to 35% of a family's income, right? So now being in these markets and understanding that private sector education is important, but still struggles with payment issues, we have been looking at other markets to expand. So today we are present in UAE in India, and Africa is the next frontier for us. With our previous venture, we're already working in the east, on the eastern side, in South Africa, in Egypt. So now Egypt and some of the Eastern African markets are some that we have started exploring, and hopefully towards the end of the year, we'll look towards piloting in them as well.
So we understand the part where you're helping parents and families pay their bills and monitor paying their school fees, but the company is also looking at enhancing family financial wellness. And this is a term we've started to hear a lot about globally. What specifically is that, and how specifically do you plan to expand the features and products under the company to help people with this?
Wonderful. Again, a great question. And for sure, we obviously hope as well, for sure, a trend for the future. So the way we look at it at Zenda is that today we are getting access to the parents through the school. And today we are enabling them to pay school fees through the app. And also, I forgot to mention earlier, we also enable them to break it into installments so that they can match their cash flows, right? But tomorrow, every single family needs to save money, right? They might want to do micro savings for a family trip. They might want to do micro investments for their children's college. So there are these financial products that a family needs to have, but right now they are being delivered in a single player domain, right? I have my bank as a father, for example, and they are catering to me. Then the mother might have a bank and they are catering to them. What we want to do is we want to bring the experiences together for a family so that they can manage their finances in a collaborative way, see their income, see their expenses, save together, invest together, again, for the family's financial overall wellness.
So last question for you. If you think about the business, which clearly is evolving and has been hugely successful, how do you define what you do? Are you a financial institution? Are you a software service? What category do you think you'll continue to play in as you evolve?
So as of today, we are a tech player. So we actually work with many of the leading payment gateways in the world to provide payments. And then on the lending side with many of the leading BNPL players to provide the lending as well. Now the future has yet to come. So one direction is that we can remain being a tech player and then partner with other people who are providing these services and offer them to our customers to add value to their experience. That seems like the direction to be. But in the future, as opportunities come and as new problems arise, we might go deeper into one of these segments as well.
Well, listen, I just wanted to thank you for joining us today on the feed and remind people again, the company is called Zenda. You can read more about them online. And also, it's a great article that was recently featured on April 24th in TechCrunch. Thank you so much for being here.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure talking. Have a great day.
Up next, the digital download you need to track your favorite things privately.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Aptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now to look at some new and trending apps. It's a highlight of the show when we're able to provide you with some cool digital downloads that can make your life easier or just talk about apps that are making waves around the world. So I do want to say this was not intentional, but there is a gorilla theme on the show today. So, Michael, let's start there with the gorillas app.
We certainly can. Sorry, I just wanted to make the noise again. I just thought there was a little bit more sound effects needed in the show.
It's smart. And, you know, we appreciate that weird sound that you're making, and we'll probably hear it a couple times. Okay, so this is a cool one. It's not available everywhere. I should just make that clear. It's called Gorillas, and it's all about groceries to your door in minutes.
Yeah, so this is interesting because I've seen some places where it's so competitive for getting stuff delivered to your house that apps are trying to make it as convenient as possible, but also almost like an express service. So some of these are saying that they can get 15-minute grocery delivery services, but obviously I'm interested to see if that works depending on where you are and what you're ordering. So one of those is Gorillas. And so it's supposed to be, or it's billed as exceptionally fast to your door, convenient delivery. And as you said, it's not available in tons of places at the moment, but it is spreading and growing rapidly. There's over 1,000, there's thousands and thousands of products, and they are all at retail price. And I think this is also very important. This app tries to ensure that it's at retail price. Again, if you've used some of these delivery apps, sometimes you can pay a little bit more and there's extra fees and stuff thrown in there as well. So it is good to try and find one of those apps that does try and find the best possible price available in your area for those items.
Yeah, it's very cool. And obviously, during the pandemic, we saw that grocery delivery services soared in popularity. Many people depended upon them. And I think we're going to continue to see this as a future trend. I mean, let's be honest, you know, a lot of people may potentially give up cars in the future. Or if you have accessibility issues, it's very hard to go to the store. You know, even simple things. If you have a pet, like a bag of dog food can be tremendously heavy to carry. So I think this is one of those services that really is here to stay.
Yeah, it can save you some time as well, especially if you're busy parents running around after your kids, you're working a lot and you do find it difficult to ensure you've got healthy food in the fridge. You know, these kinds of services can help. They deliver all kinds of products, normally fruit and vegetables, frozen goods, all kind of baby products, household items. And I do, as you just said, like I see the value in those very heavy items if you don't want to lug them, especially if you live somewhere where it's hilly or it's super cold and you don't have a car like me, you know, you are walking back and forth, or you become lazy and just go to the local store, which is exceptionally expensive, that isn't really a grocery store. So I like this idea.
I like that I tried to bring in the accessibility issues and Michael's like, or if you're just lazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I think you've said this a few times. We've gone to the Rabbit and you're like, where's your grocery store? And I'm like, oh, you mean this little convenience store in the bottom of my building?
Yes. Yeah.
Like,
Michael shops at a convenience store for his weekly groceries, just so everybody knows. Okay, so that probably means, you know, no disrespect, but you might have to work on your mental health, fitness, and mood fit is our
next
pick.
Not going to lie, you're absolutely correct.
This is a cool one. It actually, I love seeing when they win awards. So this one, again, the app is called Mood Fit. It is an award-winning app from an organization which I know called Very Well Mind in terms of being a best overall mental health app of 2020 and 2021. And basically, it allows you to have daily goals for your mental health. So it's kind of like a workout app or an app that focuses on your mental health routines and gives you lots of data and charts and tactics too, like managing your mood, gratitude, mindfulness, breathing, all those type of things.
Yeah, it's exactly that. You've hit it. The nail on the head. It is definitely a workout app for your brain. What I love about this is you can look at it in two different ways. So of course, if you're struggling, the app can help you move towards thriving and not struggling. But if you're actually thriving, it can help you build the resilience you need to keep yourself to keep yourself thriving. Which I like, because obviously that we've covered a lot of apps and it does kind of focus on if you're sad or struggling, how to get out of that. But I haven't seen a lot of apps that also have tools and abilities to, if you're doing really well, how to maintain that or enhance that. And that's what I like about this app.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. Okay, so the last one we're going to talk about is called Listy. And this is a tool.
Love a good list.
Oh my gosh, I have a list in front of me right now. I bought this. Sorry, this is just a little side story. But Instagram seems to know exactly what you want. I don't know. They're the best at advertising, because some of the advertisements I get on Instagram are things I might actually want. That is not true of any other place, online or offline. So there
was just about to say, do.
I know. This is a company called Intelligent Change, and basically it's these daily lists that help you track what you are managing. And it starts with the most important task of the day, and then secondary tasks, additional tasks, you just check them off. There's like a mood tracker. I know it's all paper-based, but every day there are quotes at the top that are, you know, pretty inspirational. Although this one,
you know, if you called me every day, I would give you a quote. Now, it could be inspirational or it could just be a life lesson. So, you know, it's a crapshoot.
I'm conflicted about the quote of the day because I haven't looked at it till now. It's from J.K. Rowling, who has become a controversial character online. And her quote is, "It is our choices that show what we truly are far more than our abilities." Well, you can say that again, J.K. Nonetheless.
You know what, though? Great film, her latest one, Fantastic Beasts. The Secrets of Dumbledore, regardless of what you think of her. I went and saw it. It was great. Cool.
Good to know. Okay, so we're totally sidetracked. Our producer's going crazy probably right now. Get to Listy. Okay, so we all love list makers. And this one is private by default. Why do they need to say that, Michael? Because, I mean, that's a good thing, but now it makes me think of all my other lists.
Yeah, so I mean, I wouldn't be sharing some of my lists, like delete this person from my life. No, I'm just kidding. I think this is fair because especially I could see this is helpful in a work environment if you've got things to do and you don't want people to see or access, or especially if somebody, you haven't done things. I don't know, that would just add anxiety to me. So I like the fact that it's just for you. It's stating that because obviously everybody is very concerned about their privacy and what people can and can't see. So I think maybe this is just simply saying, hey, guys, don't worry, no one can see this. This is private. So I like that. Whereas other times when you're not sure, you're like, is it, isn't it? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But this is great. So basically, this has helped to get you organized. If you don't want it to be private and you want to share it with people, you can then change that itself. Whereas we've talked a lot about social media apps and other apps where no one knows what they are and aren't seeing. So you then have to go in and work it out. I love the default is private to start with, and then you decide. So it gives you more control.
Yeah. So, that's kind of my question, because obviously many lists are private, but you're right. Some of these list makers store information in the cloud, so online, but as they specifically say, well, first of all, super cool. No registration is needed. I love that. So you can jump right into using it, and all of your content stays on your phone unless you tell it not to do that. So very cool. I might actually download this right now. So again, that is called Listy. Some good apps this week, Michael.
Yeah. So again, those three apps for everybody was Gorillas, the Mood Fit app, and then Listy. So of course, if you've got an app, gadget, or product you think we should check out, tweet us at Amber Mac and at AmBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag TheFeed. Coming up, how a new marketplace called MentorCam plans to connect you to the world's top experts.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Power Friend.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Finding the right advice from the right person can be tough, and often gaining access to top experts can be even tougher. Well, MentorCam is a marketplace where you can get personalized advice on all sorts of topics from high-profile experts. And joining us now to talk more about it is its CEO and co-founder, Runa Hauga. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you are absolutely right. The mentorship world is kind of fractured and broken. A lot of people don't have time. So tell us how MentorCam can solve some of those problems.
Yeah, absolutely. I think ultimately it's very beneficial in many situations to have someone in your corner that's walked the path that you try to walk. So I think we can all agree that having a mentor or having an advisor that knows the topic that you want to learn about can be very, very beneficial if most people haven't had a mentor. So getting access to one is critical. And what we want to do with MentorCam is essentially give more people that type of access. And in many ways, democratize the access to opportunity, because it's like that old adage goes, it's not what you know, it's who you know. I don't think that's held true more than ever before today, with all kinds of information being out there, but getting access to the people that can take you where you want to go is getting increasingly difficult.
I think you're absolutely right. Getting that access can be exceptionally difficult when you're trying to find the right experts to get advice from. How do you ensure it's beneficial, not only from the person seeking the advice, but also from those mentors that are giving their time? Because obviously their time is precious also. And, you know, they need to be able, you know, it needs to be a two-way street, right?
Yeah, absolutely. What we keep hearing from a lot of our high-profile mentors is that with MentorCam, they get a filter from a lot of incoming requests that they typically get and ignore otherwise. So, and I think when people pay a small fee to talk to someone else, they also think about what they talk about more thoroughly. So the quality of interactions tend to be really good. Not to mention that the mentors also benefit from being in a community with other mentors and other people that they might not otherwise encounter.
So I'm just on at the site right now. I definitely recognize a few of the mentors you have signed up, and it looks like, you know, a great opportunity for people to be able to share some of their advice, and like you said, in a more structured environment. So can you just kind of walk us through in terms of some of the feedback that you've had so far in terms of how this changes the mentorship relationship for individuals who are using your service?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the mentee side, or on the end user side, if you will, I think what a lot of people ultimately tell us is that it saves them time, right? So let's say that you have a startup and you're a first-time founder and you're looking to fundraise. It will help you to talk to someone who's done that before. If you can't find someone instantly, or if you don't already know someone, you would ordinarily spend a lot of time networking and trying to get connected to someone that you might bring on as an advisor, carve out a lot of equity, and ultimately you don't know if it's going to work out or not. So here you have it at your fingertips, and it will save you that time that it otherwise would take to network your way there. That's if you even have that opportunity and that ability to begin with. So that's something that we hear a lot. And the other thing that we hear is that you can actually learn a lot in a very short amount of time when talking to the right person. So I think those are the two pieces of feedback that has really stuck with me.
I'd be interested to know when launching this platform and as it's gotten going and people using the platform, has there been an area that has surprised you the most that you didn't know people had a need for learning about or getting advice in?
Yeah, I think for us, when we first started out, we went very broad and then we narrowed things down. So now the main focus is on professional growth and business advice. And the one thing that kind of surprised me is the applicability of advice in early stages of starting a business or developing your career. and how that advice is kind of applicable in so many different situations, but within the same vertical, if that makes sense, right? So if you're an early stage founder, to use the same example as I used earlier, you're going to need the same type of advice as other early stage founders, right? But you might have a very different starting point, depending on where you're from and who you are and what it is that you're building. And I think getting getting personalized advice, individually tailored to you, can be very, very impactful.
One last question for you, because I'm just looking at some of the pricing. I see, a quick 3-minute video might be $30. A live one-on-one session is a little bit more expensive. But just thinking of the quality of mentors that you have on the platform, which is quite high, you know, some of these people may be speakers who are earning thousands of dollars an hour. Is there an opportunity, for example, for a mentor who's part of this to potentially like donate money back into the community or something? I'm just wondering if that piece is something you've thought about down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. And in fact, most of the mentors on the platform don't really do it for the money itself. And many of them have voiced an interest in donating the proceeds. So this is something we're actually rolling out next month, the ability to choose a charity and then donate a portion or the full proceeds to a charity. And we do donation matching as well.
Very cool. Well, listen, we love this. And I think there's a huge need for this because, like you said, a lot of mentors just don't necessarily have the time, but they have good intentions. And this certainly makes them more accessible all around. So just wanted to thank you one more time. And please just let us know if you can and share how people can use this service and where to go before we say goodbye.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Go to mentor.cam or download the MentorCam app. It's available on iOS and Android.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for being on the feed.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. Up next, we talk to our friend Brittlestar about his new book deal.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. And we are so excited to have one of our regulars on the show. Stuart Reynolds, a.k.a. Brittlestar, is joining us now. Hi, Stuart.
Morning. How are you guys doing?
We are doing great. And
fantastic.
It's kind of a last minute thing getting you on the show because we saw that you tweeted out that you have a new book deal. So just for people who maybe don't follow you, which hopefully there aren't any, maybe describe kind of what you do and what's this book going to be about?
Well, see, books are these things that are made of paper and you usually and you open any. So what I do, of course, is I make social media videos. And I've been doing that for the past 9 years. And it's a weird job to have as a middle-aged, fully grown man, but it's a fun job to have, which is good. And one of the perks is occasionally enough people watch the videos that literary agents are like, hey, you know what? You should make a book. And I'm sure they're doing that for purely, non-personal reasons, non-personal gain reasons. I'm sure they're just doing it for the goodness of their heart. And it should be fun. Yeah, it'd be great.
What would the book be about and what would the title be? Because I'm thinking that you just found it. A middle-aged, fully grown man fixes the internet. If you think about your content for the last 9 years, it's just joyous. It's not like negative. It's not doom scrolling. It's funny. I think it's brilliant. And I just love the, and I don't think people who make people who don't make content don't appreciate how much work goes into it. So I appreciate that. And I do like a good giggle.
Well,
and still
you.
One of my favorite things is the KFC one that you did, which I know that was my favorite. I also didn't mind there was a cameo of some crikey fellow years ago. That wasn't the best, but I appreciated
it. I like that one. Well, I think, I appreciate what you're saying, the kind words. And I think your sentiment rings true for everyone who stopped watching my content right before the pandemic started. I think that it's just fun. To be able to wake up every morning and just decide what to do. That's pretty great. I have fairly loosely structured days, but I can get up and be like, I want to do something about this today. And I get to do that. And that's pretty lucky.
Yeah. And I was only chuckling there because I totally agree. Your content is funny and likable, but you do wade into some controversial areas, especially lately. You don't shy away from calling out politicians, of all stripes. So what is this new evolved Brittle Star that we're seeing? Is this good for you in your life and your career?
I think it was exactly.
Clearly, it's fine. You got a book deal.
Exactly. Well, we'll see. But I think it's two things. One is I had a woman send me a message about a year ago now, and she said, "You're so brave for doing what you're doing." And I was like, "Brave? Oh God, what am I doing?" And it was the first time I'd kind of thought to myself, "Oh, maybe this isn't a great idea." And then I had someone just last week, another young woman, comment. She shared one of my videos, and she said, "I want to be like this grumpy old man when I get older." And I was like, oh, okay. I've evolved into a new, persona as such of grumpy old man shouts at cloud. And that's fine. I think it obviously comes with the age where I'm sort of looking around and I think sort of an exasperation and an exhaustion of going through the pandemic and sort of thinking, like, it was one of those few times where we all had to work together to get through something. And then you're realizing, this is not our strong suit. This is not humanity. Working together is not something humanity is good at, unfortunately. So you kind of just have to take the good as you can. But I'm trying to be more positive. I really am. I'm trying super hard to be more positive and to be less angry. But it's, you know, I'm a middle-aged white guy. That's all we got is anger.
Well, I was going to say it maybe could be exasperation, because I think a lot of people are feeling that. And what I have seen through the pandemic, and I've seen this through Amber as well, that at some point, people with some kind of platform, there's some kind of responsibility. And I think that's what I also admire, that you're starting to do that with some of your content. Mm-hmm. Used your platform to help inform and call people out. And I think that's not a negative. And Amber, I've seen this with Amber's content as well. There is a point where there is a responsibility and you should try and do the best you can. And so that's what I admire about both of you guys showing up every day, because you don't know if your tweet's going somewhere good or going to help somebody or change something, or your Instagram. Sure. So, you know, that's what I would say, you know, on a serious note, because you guys both have great followers and good content.
I appreciate you saying that very much, actually. Thank you very much for saying that. And you're right. I've noticed the same with Amber's content too. And I think it gets to a point where if you have a big enough platform, which I'm fortunate enough to have a decent sized platform, I sort of think, I don't know if I feel comfortable just putting my head in the sand here. I feel like I should say something, like, just to make sure everyone's kind of getting, you know, the full picture. But you kind of have to balance that with not just harping on it and lecturing people here. What I want to do is find the balance between late 80s Oprah and then early or late 90s Oprah. I want to find somewhere.
I just want to be Oprah. I don't know why you're trying to put her into boxes.
I don't want to be Oprah. I want to be somewhere in between. I want to be like that transition between, you know, people fighting on her show and then doing really good things and making sure you sort of learn good things from her show. I want to be right somewhere in the middle where you might learn something by accident. That's where I want to hit.
I think it's a good point. I mean, I think, and you know, everyone's always evolving in any type of job they have, per se, if you can kind of call what we all do a job. But
I hope my mother's not listening, because I try to convince her every day that I actually have a job. But go ahead.
It's hard to describe for sure. But I do want to say too, you know, in terms of the following that you've been able to build and the audience and the people who kind of stand behind you, obviously that speaks volumes, because we know now that you have this book deal. So I'm just going to ask you this again, and I know you haven't really answered, but like, what does Brittle Star write a book about? Because you could write fiction, you could write nonfiction, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of directions to kind of head off in, for sure. I feel from what I've been told that it's leaning towards a nonfiction book that'll sort of address some sort of personal anecdotes and sort of how I got through some hardships to become this weird persona that I am now. And I think that's one thing I feel good about offering to people is anytime I can offer the story of like, hey, look, I'm a schlub and I was like down and out and I was able to kind of luck out by doing a couple of things and being aware that opportunity doesn't always knock. Sometimes it flatulates. So you just have to be aware.
Well, you created it. I do have to say, and I think that is a story that lots of people, it will resonate with around the world. To be fair, I don't think this is just a Canadian centric book, but I do feel I've got another title for you. Brittle Star, the boy, the man, the mystery. Now, I love that
tattoo, actually, which is amazing. Yeah it's a lower
no,
back
but
tattoo.
you think about where you came from and all of the different things you've done and the evolution of what we now know as Brittle Star and Stuart Reynolds. what is it that you haven't accomplished or you would like to do? Is there content that you steer away from or shy away from because you're scared or worried? Or is there something you've always wanted to do that you think will start to leave more of a mark? Or do you even think like that when you approach content?
I mean, I try to be aware. One of the things that I try to, when I'm creating content, is I try to be aware of, you know, perspective and how things are viewed. And I'm finding that's a big challenge currently on social media, is because I think a lot of people have gone through the same exasperation for various reasons, pandemic, politics, whatever. And all they feel they have left is just to get angry. So it's super easy for people who are consuming things right now to look at something really two-dimensionally and go, okay, I'm not going to infer anything from this. I'm not going to read between the lines. I'm just going to just take it and at face value. And if that thing is sarcastic, that's not going to go well. So I think that there's nothing that I really necessarily shy away from, but I sort of feel like I try to think to myself, am I adding any benefit to this discussion? Like for people are talking about or issue that's happening right now, am I benefiting in any way, or am I just being more detritus? Am I being more garbage out there? And there's enough garbage out there that we don't need any more. So it's kind of a balance. I want to entertain first. And again, if you can learn something or you can take away something positive or impactful or beneficial by accident, then that's great. That's kind of the goal all the time.
Well, listen, you know, I think it's exciting. It's also exciting to see you constantly kind of pivot and evolve and come up with new ideas. So I guess my final question for you is, you know, beyond the book, any new stuff that we may see come out of the Brittlestar media empire?
Well, I mean, there's lots of stuff. I'm really keen on like being able to produce more stuff and to create content that I'm not the focus of it. Like, so that includes writing, that includes, you know, we're working on an audio drama podcast of a book I wrote about 12 years ago called Shortcuts. And we've done the first two chapters of casting and basic recording now. So, I mean, there's that kind of stuff I'm really into, and I like the idea. And I figured like the older I get, as opposed to people watching me slowly melt into Yoda, I think that it'd be good to be able to create and keep myself the youthful, beautiful picture they see in their minds now.
Wow. Well, listen, we do think you're a beautiful person. I feel like this is the most serious conversation that we've ever had.
I know. It feels unnatural.
It felt uncomfortable and unnatural, but I think I'm going to wrap it up just in case it starts to go somewhere dark. So I will say that we're huge fans here. Can't wait till your book comes out, and we will all be buying and reading. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Take care.
Up next, speaking of evolution, why a gorilla in a Chicago zoo is getting some limits on his screen time.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially Speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking. And this week we are going to talk about a story that it got some attention, but I don't think it got enough attention. This happened over the past few weeks, and it's sort of odd and sad, and it's prompted Michael to make gorilla noises. So we are going to talk about Amar, who is a gorilla at Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago, according to the Chicago Sun-Times. And first of all, the gorilla is a 415-pound teenager, and according to this article, he was glued to a cell phone. So visitors would come to the zoo. Try not to laugh, guys. Okay. Visitors would come to the zoo and show him videos and pictures through the glass partition, and the gorilla became so distracted that it was causing a lot of problems, and the gorilla wasn't sort of adapting naturally and was kind of obsessed with this attention. So staff members had put up a rope to keep people away from the glass partition so they couldn't come right up to it and stop kind of distracting the gorilla. And I don't know, it's funny, but it's kind of sad at the same time. Aaron, maybe I'll start with you. Like, I read this story and my dad actually shared it, and it just feels to me like it's such a sad reflection, no pun intended, of society today.
I agree. I think it reflects more on the poor choices of the human visitors and on the gorilla. The gorilla, you know, screens are attractive. There's colors. They're bright. Things happen. I mean, you've seen like a child, like a human child, a very, very young. Their eyes always go to the screen whenever it's presented to them. And I think it's sad that the rope has to be put up, and maybe signs have to be put up at zoos also. Like, anyone who's been to a zoo knows the signs are there saying, don't feed the animals. Don't feed them human food. Dispose of your trash and your straws. Dispose of things. Human food is bad for the animals. I guess we're at the point where they have to put up signs saying, don't turn your phone around to the glass. Don't show videos to the animals, especially some of the higher primates, because they'll be lured to them. It is sad. It's a sad reflection on human behavior, not the ape behavior, and what we have to be reminded not to do.
This blows my mind because we've destroyed the human race with smartphones and screen time and social media, and now we're doing it to animals. And what is even more upsetting about this is the story is that, of course, you guys, as you mentioned, the gorilla was distracted by people visiting the zoo, their smartphones that were showing pictures and the flash and the bright light from it was distracting him from not noticing he was being rushed by another teenage gorilla, which obviously is what they do to show aggression. Males do to try and stake their territory. So he was put in like harm's way because of people visiting the zoo. This is very upsetting. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, because as you guys said, this is a very sad reflection on people, but I don't think anyone's going to change it or do anything. I know when I go to the zoo or when I go and see animals, I try not to use my phone at all. And I try and do this in most places to actually enjoy the surroundings as opposed to being glued to the phone and videoing or seeing it through the phone, which makes no sense.
Yeah, and I think also when you look at a story, obviously, like, the headline is funny, it gets attention, it makes us giggle, all of those things are absolutely true, but I worry a little bit about the sort of dependence we have on smartphones, like, in terms of them overriding any common sense. And just because we have a few minutes, I'll give you guys an example. Oh, this is a horrible story. This week, on Tuesday evening, I was shopping with my son for sneakers. So he's 13 years old, and we were at a mall in East Toronto, and he was trying on shoes, and then we were kind of at a corner in the mall, close to an exit, and we heard like just a kind of a lot of chaos. Then we saw two security guards sprinting. I mean, not a normal like jog, like, hey, what's going on? Like sprinting as fast as they could. So I was like, I'm super uncomfortable. We should go. So we stand up, we turn the corner, and immediately we just see this trail of blood and like, seriously, 20 plus 30 people standing along the side of this corridor, and in front of the Starbucks, we see a kind of a trail of blood, and then a young person on the ground in a red hoodie who was getting medical attention. The police hadn't even arrived. And then we turned to a woman. We said, oh my gosh, what happened? She said, there's been a stabbing, like multiple people stabbed. Obviously, I'm you know, terrified. I'm with my kid. And we hear this woman say, back up, and screaming. And we like took off. But for the 60 seconds that I was standing there, guys, I kid you not, there were 20 plus people standing at the edges of this scene, many of them with their phones out. And it was such a, you know, despite the fact that, just a side note, it looks like the young people who are stabbed are in serious condition, and they've arrested a 14-year-old boy, which is even more devastating. But just that vision to me of seeing people stand there and thinking, you know, instead of getting out of the way, helping,
it's
I'm going
it.
To take pictures and film it. And I understand, and you know, you try to understand that situation. But I looked at this and I was like, this is the saddest scene in our society.
I do want to share something to on the other side of that, to counter that. When I was in Australia earlier this year, I was walking with my brother and his fiance at the time, and walking down the street, and somebody got hit by a car. Now, there was probably 8 or 10 people came out of shops and restaurants to the street, and first thing they did, they all launched down to help the person. Not a single phone got out. Someone said, can someone call an ambulance? And then someone yelled out, I'll do it. And it was so orderly and helpful. And I didn't see a single phone come out. So that gave me hope. I don't think we have the same thing in North America, which is that. Just getting back to the gorilla story, though, what is even more upsetting is that the gorilla is living with other gorillas, they're bachelor gorillas. And so why this is actually quite scary, well, not great, is that you don't want them to be having screen time to take away from this time in their lives where their pre-adult developmental period is so important. And this is where they learn to interact with each other. So in essence, in the story that we read, it's like, in essence, they're learning to be gorillas. So obviously being a gorilla is not looking at a phone. So I think that's the other part from that developmental point of view, which obviously you can then think about the same issues that we have with kids. There's problems with people, kids spending too much time, screen time, which obviously isn't great for their developmental period as well when they're growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. So Aaron, maybe just some like final words from you. I mean, is this a sign that maybe we've gone too far in terms of like, you know, not using our phones responsibly, or should this just be the end of zoos? Like, I know that's a very extreme argument, but like, what's your gut say about that?
My gut says that people need to be educated a bit better on how to use their phone. Look, lots of provinces and states and jurisdictions have no holding the phone while driving laws, but those laws had to be implemented because there's a period where everyone is holding their phone while driving.
No common sense. Don't hold a phone while driving. Sorry.
Right. So while showing your phone to a gorilla may not cause accidents or injure humans the same way a car accident could, there's an education process there for humans to learn to not hold their phone. So I think maybe now a sign should be put up around all zoos, especially around the higher mammals and higher apes, to don't turn your phone around to them. If you want to take pictures, it's great, but don't show things on your phone to the great apes.
I think that's a very good point. And also just treating nature with more respect, right? I think that's something that we don't do regularly. And perhaps it's because we're just not, you know, exposed, especially in cities, to as much nature as we would like to be exposed to, and don't understand the ramifications of some of our horrible human behavior. And this would be
Do you think we should be teaching common a subject called common sense in schools? Just throwing it out there.
Oh, yes. Not just in schools, like to adults, like evening classes.
When the workplace, 100%.
All right. Let us know what you think. You can find us all on Twitter online. I'm at Amber Mack. I'm at mbancroft80. Aaron, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at my name, Aaron Papernick, Aaron with one A.
All right. And please use the hashtag The Feed.
This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B on SiriusXM, Canada Talks, Channel 167.